Hello and welcome in. It's time for the debut episode of the 48 Minutes Podcast. I'm Ross Geiger, the host of the podcast, and just want to tell you a little bit about myself before we get started here. I was a video coordinator in the NBA for seven NBA seasons, working with the Milwaukee Bucks, Phoenix Suns, and New York Knicks. I'm thrilled to be joined alongside my co-hosts, Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and Michael World B. Freer. Guys, tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Thanks, Ross. It's great to be here with you and World B. I'm a 32-year veteran at ESPN. I oversaw our NBA studio shows for about 15 years, coordinated SportsCenter coverage at the NBA Finals, worked with the analysts, talked to every team, talked to the league, have a lot of contacts around the league and a lot of people that hopefully will join us on this show. I started Pure Hoops Media after I left ESPN. We did about 1,000 podcasts, but now I've taken my talents to the Believe Network to work with you guys doing podcasts, and hopefully all you guys will, and gals will listen into us moving forward. World B?
Thank you, Bruce. I am a veteran of 20-plus years of ESPN, working on a number of shows, my favorite being NBA Tonight for about 4 or 5 seasons as a researcher for them. Absolutely. That's where the nickname World B. Freer was actually originated, thanks to a producer, Eric Smith, name dropping there. And after leaving ESPN, I joined up with a company called Stat Factor. And what they do is provide pregame research materials for announcers for various sports and various networks. And what I do is I write pregame advanced stats reports for announcers for the Milwaukee Bucks, the Portland Trail Blazers, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Warriors, the New Jersey Nets, and some NBA TV analysts from time to time. It's the sport I love more than any other, and it's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
Thank you guys for the brief intro. I think that gives our listeners a little bit better feel of who they're listening to here today so that they know their personnel moving forward. Let's tip things right off here and get started with the Golden State Warriors. Got some bad news today surrounding Steph Curry. Going to be out a few weeks. Bruce, have some thoughts on the Dubs?
Yeah, well, in that Wednesday night game against Indiana, Steph suffered a partial dislocation of his left shoulder. They did an MRI on him on Thursday, and he's going to be out for at least a couple of weeks. So he's irreplaceable. He averages 30. He's the leading assist guy with just under 7, and he's the second leading rebounder at 6.6. There's no way for him to be replaced while they're gone. So we'll see if they can hang on. They've got 4 more games on their current road trip, and we all know their road record isn't very good. So we'll see if they can kind of buck up and get their act together without Steph. What do you think, Michael?
I think it's really obviously a difficult loss, and what is a difficult season for the Warriors, nothing like we expected coming off a championship. Their issues on the road are really surprising. They were one of the best defensive teams in the league last year, behind only the Celtics. And this year, they're the second worst road defensive team, giving up 118 points per 100 possessions. Only the Spurs, who are just a train wreck homer road on defense, are playing worse on the road, 2-13. And you're right, Steph is just out. He was never getting mentioned as a MVP type candidate because of all the other guys or whatever and their record. But there's only one other player doing 36-6 in the NBA right now, and that's Luka. It's Steph and Luka doing that. So one of my incredible stats of the season so far is the Warriors, when Steph is on the court, as opposed to when he's off, they score 19 more points per 100 possessions when Steph is on the court than when he's off. When he's off, they are under a point per possession. So now what are they going to do? The defense is bad, and now your best offensive player is out. What are you going to do?
I'll tell you what you got to do there, World B. Jordan Poole is going to have to put his money where his mouth is, all right? They paid him big-time cash this offseason. He's going to be a guy that has to step up. Other guys on that roster that are going to have to contribute big time now. Dante DiVincenzo coming over from Sacramento. Of course, he had a nice, successful stint with the Milwaukee Bucks when they were in their big playoff run. So he's got some experience behind him. And then some of those younger guys are going to have to step up as well. Jonathan Kuminga, He's going to have to really step up offensively. He always brings the defense, but he's going to have to continue to bring that athleticism on the offensive side of the floor with Curry's absence. And, you know, they're just waiting here, you know, biting their nails, hoping Andrew Wiggins can get back. I mean, he is such a huge puzzle piece to that team. They need Wiggins back. They're going to need Wiggins to have the ball in his hands a little bit more, working out of screen and rolls, and should be interesting to see what they do.
You know, Draymond Green has had, you know, decent numbers this year, but, you know, I don't think you can really rely on him to up his scoring too much. So I'm glad you mentioned DiVincenzo, because he's really a guy like, here's your chance, Dante. You know, you came out of college with a lot of hype. You've been okay. You've been a role player. But I think now, I mean, he's probably going to be looking at what? Probably, you know, 28 to 30 minutes a game, perhaps, yeah, with Steph not in there. So this is really his big chance.
And we haven't even talked about Klay Thompson yet. We haven't mentioned Klay, who, when did he just decide to be, I'm only shooting a three kind of player? Because that's really what he's become. He's a 38%. He's shooting much better from three-point range than last year at 38%. But overall, he's shooting just 40% from the field, and he's only taking about five or six shots inside the three-point line. When did he decide, I'm just going to devote all my time to shooting threes? I mean, they need his all-around game, and they need him to pick up his scoring, obviously.
You know, Steph led the team in scoring in 19 of their first 29 games. The only other three guys to lead the team in scoring, the aforementioned Jordan Poole five times, Klay three times, and Andrew Wiggins twice. So I don't really know, you know, how much they can really, you know, I mean, who's going to be their stud every night? Is it going to be Poole? I mean, he's averaging just under 18. What do you think, Ross? I mean, which of those three guys do you think is going to have to increase their scoring the most in Steph's absence?
I think it's going to be the guy that's going to have the ball in his hands, the primary ball handler. It's going to be Jordan Poole. I think Jordan Poole's really got to step up, become much more consistent from the outside and just overall from the field. He struggled a little bit this season finding his rhythm, and they're going to need him to do that really fast here. Another interesting thing with this franchise is they're typically a team that is very patient on the trade front. I know that we're going to talk about trades a little bit later on the podcast here today, but they might need to, you know, start to put that in motion. And, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. Right now, they're a game under 500. They are in the last playoff spot, last play-in tournament spot at the moment. And they got a guy in James Wiseman that might have some value to some of these underachieving teams around the NBA. And, you know, if they can pull the trigger and bring in another contributor, I think they're at that point in time where they need to start considering that.
They have to set up their defense. We talked about who's going to pick up the scoring. The minute they start playing better defense, their world gets a lot better with or without Steph. The only way they got to keep the scores down. They got to pick up the defense if they really want to stay where they are right now.
You know, you mentioned they're 2-13 on the road, and they have four more road games on this trip: at Philadelphia, at Toronto, at the Knicks, at Brooklyn. I mean, they could lose all four of those games. But then they come home for eight games in a row, which will be hopefully an opportunity for them to kind of get their footing, you know, without Steph. But some of the teams they're going to be playing at home are some pretty hungry teams. Here's who they're going to be looking at home. They're going to be in that eight games. They're going to look at Memphis. Okay. Much improved. Well, not much improved, just really good. Charlotte, Utah, hungry team. Portland, hungry team. Atlanta, well, they're a hot mess. They gave up 50 to Orlando in the first quarter on Wednesday night. They're a mess. But then Detroit, missing Cade Cunningham. Orlando with the incredible Bol Bol. And Phoenix, who's also been kind of, you know, stumbling lately. So, you know, we're really going to get a chance to see, you know, what Golden State's made of. Because out of those eight home games, I mean, they could lose four of those.
Yeah, let's face it too, Bruce, kind of just adding to that here. They're the defending champions. And if we know one thing about defending champions, you always have a target on your back. You know, they're the defending champs. Everyone's going to bring their A game against you, especially a team that's embarrassed teams in the past, just, you know, shimmying, knocking down threes and, you know, talking a ton of trash. I mean, I think other teams are out for blood against this team. And the Warriors really got to get it going.
To your point, how many times did you go to Orlando? The Warriors come to Orlando, and there's bigger crowds cheering for the Warriors, for Steph and everybody. Yeah, their teams are going to be licking their chops at the opportunity to get back at them. No question.
Hey, Ross and Mike, remember in the preseason, I'm sure you do, the video was everywhere, when Draymond Green cold cocked Jordan Poole, seemingly for no apparent reason. I'm just wondering has that had any kind of effect on the team's psyche going into the season? Because look, this is one of the worst sort of first thirds of the season for a defending champ that you really can remember. And I'm just wondering, you know, did everyone kind of pretended like we're okay. I'm wondering, are they really okay? And of course it's speculation on our part, but you guys have been around. What do you all think? You think that has had any kind of a lingering effect on how they've played?
I totally think it has. I think it's kind of still a monkey in the room as far as an awkwardness that situation did happen amongst that group, a group that in years past has had tremendous chemistry. I think they lost a lot of that chemistry in the offseason. We saw one of their best defensive players, the Mitten, Gary Payton Jr., head off to Portland. He's due back here soon. Wouldn't it be nice to have him as part of this team? And Steph Curry's brother-in-law, Damian Lee, signed a one-year deal in Phoenix. He would be another piece on the perimeter for them. But I think more so than just the basketball side of things, I think those guys in particular were gel guys in that locker room. And, you know, now you're inserting guys like Dante DiVincenzo. Not to say he's not a good guy, but he just doesn't have that chemistry to kind of get them back to smoother waters as you know, Dante DiVincenzo walks in and, you know, he can't just speak up in that locker room amongst those type of guys and kind of settle things down. So, you know, I absolutely think it played a factor. What do you think, World B?
Well, I'll put it this way. I don't know what negative impact it had, but it certainly hasn't been a positive impact on this team. Sure. So there's only one other way to go. It's that it was the beginning of what said at the top has been a really surprising season. That was the first part of it. And it really, they haven't had any comfortable moments really for this franchise, for this team since then. They've had some good moments. They got the offense just outside the top 10 after it was struggling. And we talked about how the defense has really fallen off. There just hasn't been a comfort level with this team since that moment. And the losses are mounting. They're under 500. So, yeah, I don't know if it's had a negative effect, but it sure hasn't been positive.
Yeah, speaking of comfort level, let's talk about a team out east. The New York Knicks starting to kind of find their stride here. I know that makes you happy, World B. Man, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle, and their new leader in Jalen Brunson on a 5-game win streak, won last night in Chicago on the road. World B, we'll start with you as the Knicks fan here. Tell us a little bit about your New York team.
They were a team that for the most of the season had just been really a blah team, just an average team. Listen to this. They were at various points during the season, 1-1, 3-3, 4-4, 5-5, 6-6, 7-7, 8-8, 9-9. I mean, that's a definition of blah. No momentum one way or the other. They just weren't doing anything. And now they got blown out a few games ago by Dallas. And then ever since then, it's been 5 in a row. They've really picked it up. They've scored 120 points per 100 possessions in 3 out of their last 4 games. It's really been an impressive display. Their defense much better. They're now top 10 in defense, which is where they should be under Thibodeau, and they weren't last year. You mentioned Julius Randle. He's been playing well. RJ Barrett really had nowhere to go but up. Let's be honest here. He was the worst shooter in the league. They're just by numbers, he was the worst shooter in the league. So he had nowhere to go but up. And Jalen Brunson's been terrific for them. There hadn't no complaints whatsoever. I'd like to see a little more of a 3-pointer, but he's been terrific. 30 points the other night. No issues on my end.
You know, they're riding a 5-game winning streak going into the weekend, going into Friday. They're 5-1 in December. They have a better record than the Warriors, okay? Nobody was probably expecting that. They've lost Obi Toppin. He's going to be reevaluated in another 1 or 2 weeks. They can definitely use him back. You know, he gives them some exciting high wire act video and exciting for the fans. But they really do. They have a big three, right? They've got Randall averaging, you know, almost 23-9. Brunson, as you mentioned, averaging 20 and over 6 assists. And Barrett is playing a nice all-around game, you know, 19, almost 6 rebounds, 3 assists. And one of the things that I look at when I'm trying to figure out, do I like a team or not, how are they on the road? The Knicks are good on the road. They're 8-6, you know.
They're better than home. They're better road record than home record.
Exactly. And they're you know, what? And again, I remember the late, great Dr. Jack Ramsey. We were talking about, well, how do you determine whether a team is a good defensive team? And he said his favorite stat was opposing field goal percentage, opponent's field goal percentage. The Knicks are number 2 in the NBA in that category right now, trailing only Milwaukee. They also make their free throws. They're an 80% free throw shooting team. So they're not leaving points on the floor, you know, so that's going to always help you in a close game, right? So, Russ, you spent some time in New York. What are your thoughts about that squad?
Yeah, I've been very interested in kind of Tom Thibodeau's ability to kind of switch out some chess pieces with some of the other contributors on that team. One that's really stood out as of recently is the young swingman in Quentin Grimes. He's starting to put together a solid season, coming up with big plays, big shots. He had one the other night late in the shot clock, late in the game, knocked it down from 3 on a tough pass. Wasn't even in the shooting pocket. He's really stood out. Mitchell Robinson was hurt to start the year, kind of in and out of availability. He's kind of putting together some momentum here, which is great to see for them as they just gave him a nice little payday this summer. And then they've benched Fournier. Tom Thibodeau is famously known for playing his seasoned veterans, and he's elected to go with a young gunner in Grimes that's, you know, competing on both ends. And Fournier is not seeing the minutes that he probably thought he would see all year long. So they're kind of switching some of the pieces up, and it seems to be working for New York.
Here's a stat on the Knicks, to Bruce's point about their defense. The first 23 games of the season, they were 10-13 right after the Mavs loss. They hadn't held a single team under a point per possession. So in the last 5 games, they've done that 3 times. So they've really stepped up the D along with picking up the offense, and scheduling helps. But they're playing their best ball of the season. And now they're a factor in the East, at least in the middle of the East.
You know, that Atlantic division is really very strong. All 5 teams in that division are top 10 or 10th place or higher. So if the season ended today, all 5 of the teams would be in the play-in games or better. So that means that, you know, going down the stretch, they're going to be a battle-tested team when it's all said and done, because they're going to be playing Philly and they're going to be playing Boston and, you know, and Toronto, whatever. So, you know, I think things are definitely looking up. And one last thing I like about them, they're a good rebounding team. They're second, they're mm-hmm. third in the league in rebounding. So, you know, defense, rebounding, it's almost like in football. You know, you have to run the ball and play defense. And in the NBA, if you take care of the ball, you rebound, and you make free throws, you know, that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, one interesting thing I'm continuing to look out for with the Knicks is, of course, no secret at this point, Cam Reddish, not happy with his role. Hasn't really, you know, gelled well with that team as far as finding consistent minutes and productivity when out on the floor. He's had some good games, but, you know, he's kind of just trying to figure things out. So, you know, December 15th, which will be the next point that, you know, definitely want to get to here on 48 Minutes here today. Where could Cam Reddish end up? I think he's definitely very serviceable. Another young, talented player that still has a lot to grow into his game. And I think there could be some suitors out there. But December 15th, which is today, it was the deadline for the restriction that applies to players who sign contracts in the offseason. And now it enables teams to move more players and salaries around, making it a bit less tricky in trade negotiations. So this year there were 74 players in total signed in the summer. They are now available to be traded. And it makes the teams, GMs, and even the Trade Machine Fanatics very happy because now they're able to get to work.
Yeah, I mean, we were all going to sort of pick a team that we thought, you know, what do they need and what can they try and get? I'm always happy to lead off with the Los Angeles Lakers because as a Celtics fan, you know, they're our number one frenemy, right? Some would say enemy. I don't feel that way. I like the Lakers, even though I like to see Boston beat them. But the Lakers, they're on the brink of not even making it into the play-in from what I see. They need shooters. They're number 30. They're last in the NBA in three-pointers made. They're last in the NBA in three-pointing shooting percentage, 32%. Their best three-point shooter is Lonnie Walker IV. Austin Reeves isn't bad, but LeBron's under 32%. Russ is just over 28%, and Dennis Schroeder's under 26%. So what can they do? I mean, well, they need some three-point shooters. And again, I think somebody like Eric Gordon could be a buyout candidate in Houston. It might be somebody that they could pick up on the cheap. He's making $19.5 million this year. So if they picked him up halfway through the season, they'd theoretically only be on the hook for 10. But another guy I was thinking about, and I don't know if it's realistic or not, but Buddy Hield in Indiana, he's a 30-year-old guy on a team that's really kind of going into that youth movement. If they could somehow or another swing something for Buddy Hield, I think he could be a guy that really helps the Lakers get up into the actual playoff picture instead of down at the bottom. I mean, he turns 30 this weekend. He's seventh in the league in made threes, and he's shooting over 38%. So that's pretty good percentage for a volume three-point shooter. So if I'm Rob Pelinka, I'm looking at seeing if I could get Buddy Hield. But if not, if I'm going to the bargain table, maybe look at Eric Gordon when and if Houston buys him out.
World B, any team come to mind that you're keeping an eye on?
I'm not keeping an eye on teams as much as I am players, just to see some of these guys. You know, John Collins gets mentioned all the time. Ever since he signed his contract, I think. But I think his contract just makes it really difficult. His career he's kind of, I don't want to say fallen off because his numbers are so decent. But, you know, just a few years ago, he was a 2010 guy for a season that got him his contract. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't really been approaching that since, and it's been a downward decline. He's still got about $75 million left on his deal that somebody's going to have to pick up. But it sounds like there are teams that maybe would be interested in him. Bogdanovich over in Detroit is having a tremendous season, and to the point where the Pistons are really unsure if they want to let him go. He's a veteran. So he would be a candidate for them to move on and get more young pieces for their already young roster. But he's had such, from what we read and hear, has such a positive influence that, and he's been so productive. He would be, if somebody can grab him, they would really be doing themselves some good because he gets the rep as a shooter, perimeter guy, which he is. But from the painted area inside, away from the restricted area, in that painted area, he's top 10 in the league. From the mid-range, he's top 10 in the league. From the corner, he's top 10. From the above-the-break area, he's top 10. He's a quality all-around shooter this year. And if somebody can get him, I think they got to give up a little more than they probably like for somebody like him. But if they can do it, you're getting quality, I think.
Yeah, I tend to agree there. And great points there with the stats. I mean, numbers don't lie there. Team that I'm looking at, is in the Valley of the Sun. The Phoenix Suns, obviously, they've been struggling. We could certainly, you know, go down a laundry list of reasons why that is happening. But they need bigger wing help. You know, they need some toughness. Or as a former Sun, P.J. Tucker would say, they need a dog. And there's not too many of those around the league. So kind of keeping my list short here, more realistic to guys I have in mind for Phoenix. Starting in Charlotte, a one-time Sun and fan favorite, Kelly Oubre. Oubre is on a team that's certainly going nowhere this year. They will be in the Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes. Kelly Oubre coming in could certainly provide a boost, some energy to that squad, maybe even off the bench in the second unit. And he at least brings some flash. They need some energy. Right now they're a little too dull in the games that I've watched. of the Suns this season. Kelly Oubre is on an expiring contract, I believe. So, you know, they could certainly make the numbers work there and throw in a couple picks, second rounders or whatnot. And then another guy that comes to mind in Houston, Eric Gordon, as Bruce already had mentioned, he has been a talk around Phoenix for years. I mean, I remember back when his brother was playing at Arizona State, he almost even signed a free agent deal with the Suns. Ended up not happening. But Gordon has been linked to Phoenix in the past. And another guy on the Rockets that's now being linked, which I kind of like, KJ Martin, Kenyon Martin's son. Very athletic, 3-4 guy. Definitely brings out the highlights, a lot like Toppin. He's having a really great season. He's starting to shoot the ball a little bit better from the outside as well. And he kind of reminds me of a younger Jeremy Grant, almost like Jeremy Grant was when he was on the Thunder. I could see him, not as long as Jeremy, but he blocks shots at the rate Jeremy can. And if he can continue to develop and grow and get some more minutes, I think he could be a really big force with a team like Phoenix, where he's the fourth or fifth option. So definitely keeping an eye on the Rockets and the Suns. I think they could be good trade partners. And then just tossing out Kelly Oubre, because he's had some success here in the past and could do so again if a trade were to occur.
Hey, Ross, I mean, you watch the Suns pretty frequently. What's the deal with Chris Paul? Has he lost something off his fastball? Is he just getting old, or is he just in a slump that he will kind of pull himself out of? Sorry to throw a curveball at you there.
No, you're good. I think he certainly has lost a step, unfortunately. Hope that's not the case for Suns fans, because they desperately need him to have any hopes of returning to even a Western Conference Finals with how tough the West is. But he was out this past injury 2 to 3 weeks longer than first expected. He told the media, "Don't worry about it. I'm fine." Well, I'm worried about it, because he's back now. And, you know, he just doesn't look the same out there. And maybe he's still trying to get going and wipe up some of that rust. But I've got major concerns about Chris Paul moving forward. They need to continue to limit his minutes. And his usage the past couple of years has been insane. It's been off the charts how much he had been used. And I think it's really just kind of catching up to him. World B, what do you think of Chris Paul?
I think, well, I'll take a wait-and-see approach, just because he had been injured. And he is slowing down. There's just no way, you know, around it. It was going to happen. I think he was one of the ones that was really upset with what happened the other night. He got frustrated with the whole Williamson dunk at the end. I think he was one of those leading the charge, if you will, opposing that. He's going to be the guy that, honestly, that brings them back. If they're going to make a run, if they're going to come back and be the team that we think they can be, age or no age, he's got to be the guy. It's his game. It's his last go-around for a chance to really do it. And who else on that team is going to step up and do it? Mikal Bridges is a really nice player, but he's not a superstar. DeAndre Ayton got paid like a superstar, but he's not really a superstar. Devin Booker is.
Yep.
Book needs Chris Paul. He doesn't need Chris Paul with him, but it really makes him a tough team when the two of them are at their top. Book has been pretty much good all season. Chris Paul's got to match that.
Yeah, Devin Booker definitely in that MVP conversation as of now. It's very warranted. He's had an incredible year, has stepped up big time for the team, but, you know, it sometimes just falls short not having enough help around him, which I think they'll be active here soon. James Jones will be smiling and dialing, looking for some deals with some of the assets they have.
Hey, by the way, real quick, Bruce, you mentioned the Lakers, how they need perimeter shooting, and they do. It's everything you said was correct. They had the guy, and they just let him walk to Sacramento and Malik Monk. He only shot 39% last year on threes. Why would they need somebody like that coming off the bench and draining threes? They just let him walk.
There's all kinds of former Lakers out there that, you know, that could shoot better than what they got there now. I mean, how about Brandon Ingram? Of course, that got them Anthony Davis. It got them a chip a couple years ago. So it's hard to second guess that.
To your point, they're going to have to make a trade and give up something good of value to get something they had
And who just do you even want? Who do you even want on their roster besides Davis and LeBron? They're not getting traded.
It's always a first round pick. They don't want to give up their picks.
Yeah, like 5 years. It's like, right, 27, yeah, 2020. I mean, like, you know, LeBron will be in his 29th season probably by then. But you know, they're a dumpster fire, boy. I'll tell you, the way they melted down at the end against Boston the other night was very, very inspiring for Boston fans.
They're wasting an MVP season by AD. They're wasting an MVP season. MVP-type season.
You're right.
And one last thing on Malik Monk. I mean, I think he took it as a slap in the face that he didn't get a contract from the Lakers this offseason. I'm not sure if you guys have noticed, but he's wearing a Band-Aid right across his face now. I think that was the slap from not getting any type of contract to return to the Lakers this year. So,
yeah, by the way, the Kings are only a top 10 offense this year. What would the Lakers need with somebody who can be a spark like that?
I think it's an underlying message from Malik wearing that Band-Aid this year. You know, it was a slap in the face not to be invited back to LeBron's Lakers group. So we'll see there. But moving on here, let's talk about another team in L.A. They're kind of the second fiddle most of the time, but they're slowly and quietly on the rise, headed in the right direction, climbing the ladder. The Los Angeles Clippers. Bruce, anything on L.A., and have you been noticing the Clippers moving up the standings?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, as was the case with the Knicks, they're good on the road, 8-7, all right? They're number six right now in the West. They've won three in a row. They're 8-2 when Kawhi Leonard's played, okay? And they're 9-11 without him. PG-13 has been pretty steady for them. And they really have a nice guy coming off the bench. You might have heard of him. His name is John Wall. What a great luxury. What a great, like, you know, explosive guy to come off your bench. And very quietly, Ivica Zubac, he's averaging almost 11 rebounds a game. He started all 30 games. He's been their most consistent guy, really, if you think about it. He's always in double figure on rebounds. And so, yeah, I mean, as the second fiddle is not really the second fiddle right now in L.A.,
yeah.
World B.
It won't be second fiddle when playoffs come, I'll tell you that. Unless things turn around for the other Lakers team, they'll be looking, they'll be sitting watching the Clippers. Their defense is right up there with the best, which it should be when you have some of the players they have. They're just getting PG, Paul George, and Kawhi healthy again. They came back the same day, that December 5th game. Now they're all getting a rest in Thursday's game. Everybody's taking the night off. Just as
what a slap. They're
going. Everybody.
What a slap in the face to the Suns. It's like, you know, we'll just beat you with our second team because you guys stink right now.
It worked for Brooklyn that we'll mention here in a few minutes, but they did the same thing last week and did just fine. But, I mean, when they get Paul George and Kawhi on the court together, their defense is as good as it gets. They're barely giving up a point per possession when the two of them are on the court together. Now, they're not on the court all the time because of injuries and stuff, but their offense really has been a problem from the start. They came into the season with all these great shooters, perimeter shooters that we thought were going to be outstanding, and they're just now starting to shoot a little bit better. It had been really bad for much of the season. But when they get those guys healthy, they can be up there with the best of them in the West. I totally believe that.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Will B, but that's a huge if. I think my biggest thing with this team, they've got the names. I mean, no question. You look at their roster, even the common NBA fan probably knows half of them. Batum, Wall, Kennard. I mean, they got the names. But the big if is, can they get them all healthy at the same time? And that has been their biggest problem. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard haven't even played 10 games together this season. Norman Powell is now out. He's out for another week, I think. So I just feel like they keep just changing the guards here of who's sitting out, who's available, who's injured, who's not. Can they really bring it all together and you know, have a cohesive unit and really get the gelling you need in the regular season to step up in playoff time together and you know, be in fluid motion? That's my biggest concern. Bruce, you've probably seen some teams like this in the past with the Celtics back in their heyday. Of having the Ray Allens, Kevin Garnetts. What do you think about just having the names, but maybe not having them all on the same page?
if they're not on the same page, then they're going to all be sort of out for their own best interests. And that is not going to be good for any team. I mean, you want these guys to take good shots and you want them to share the ball. And I think, you know, Ty Lue's a good coach. I think, you know, he's got a championship. So if, you know, he's inclined to do the right thing and try and get those guys to kind of buy into the whole team concept. So I think the Clippers' best basketball is still going to be in front of them.
I agree. And I think Ty Lue's a great coach. He's a guy, if you're going to have somebody to right this ship and keep it steady until everybody gets healthy and everybody's ready to go, that's a great coach to have, I think. I'm a big Ty Lue fan. They are ridiculously better offensively when Paul George is on the court as opposed to off. They score about 10 more points per 100 possessions when he is on the court than off. But when Kawhi is on the court, it's almost 13 points better that they're holding teams down defensively per 100 possessions than when he's off the court. So they desperately need both of those guys as healthy as possible, as rest, which doesn't mean they should just take nights off like tonight, just randomly. Things are going so well. Why? It took you forever to get on the court. Why are you just taking the night off? I understand rest. I understand keep them healthy. But, hey, come on, we're in December. It's mid-December. Who cares? Get on the court.
Hey, Ross, if the Clippers beat the Suns with, like, none of their good guys playing, people are going to be, like, you know, committing suicide in Phoenix, I think. They're going to be like, what?
Yeah, no, that would be a tough L when Suns desperately need to get back to their winning ways. And it hopefully should start tonight. I mean, they're getting a cakewalk type roster of the Clippers. But a guy to watch out for in that game who's going to get some minutes tonight, Brandon Boston Jr. I'm a big fan and big believer in that young offensive force, and can't let him get going. So he'll probably come off the bench for the Clippers. Keeping an eye on him tonight and getting excited to, you know, see what he can do out there on the floor tonight. But yeah, would not be good for the Suns fans if they take this L after just losing to the Houston Rockets, another very young team not looking to make the playoffs this year. But let's go ahead and shift our focus to another second fiddle little brother team in New York. You know, we discussed the Knicks, but very quietly here as the dust has settled from all the media, negative media that they've gotten, you know, earlier on this season, the Brooklyn Nets have started to find their stride. They're starting to climb the standings as well. Bruce, what do you got for me with the Brooklyn Nets and what they're up to right now?
It's hard for these words to actually pass through my lips, but they're playing really good defense. They've become a really good defensive team. I mean, they're tied for fourth in the league with the aforementioned Clippers in opposing field goal percentage, which, again, we said earlier when we're talking about the Knicks, what an important defensive stat that is. They're, you know, in the top third of the league as far as fewest points allowed. And they've won eight out of their last nine. I mean, ever since they kind of got Kyrie Irving back from his whatever you want to call it, suspension for reasons we all are aware of. The team is 9-3 since he returned from the suspension. Okay. He's playing well, averaging 25, shooting almost 48%. But they actually started playing a little better before he came back because during his suspension, they were 5-3, right? So it's not like the bottom dropped out on them. So they're very fortunate in that they have, you know, Kevin Durant has just been an absolute stalwart for those guys. I mean, he's playing almost 37 minutes a game. I don't know where that ranks him among the league leaders, but, I mean, it's up there. I mean, 36.7 minutes is a lot of minutes, particularly for a guy his age. He's shooting. He's 34 years old. He's shooting almost 56% from the floor. So, and Nick Claxton has been really good for those guys, too. He's actually leading the entire league in field goal percentage. Granted, he mostly dunks and shoots layups, but he's shooting over 73% from the floor. So he's pretty efficient. And he's averaging almost 9 rebounds. So I think once he cut off his blonde hair and became, because last year when his blonde locks were flopping around, he didn't look as fearsome as he does now, where he's kind of, you know, a little bit shorter cropped. He actually looks a little bit meaner out there, even though he looks like he weighs about 130 pounds. But he's balling for those guys. They're climbing up quietly in the East. And, you know, it's neck and neck with them and the Knicks. You know, who owns the city right now, Mike?
Well, first of all, I loved Ross's description of them as second fiddle. I think I should get a T-shirt that says that for them. Even no matter how well they do, they're playing great. They're 4 in a row, 8 out of 9. And to Bruce's point, ever since they, you know, even back when they got Harden and they formed their own version of the Big Three with Kyrie and KD and Harden, it was always about the defense with that group. They were only going to go, and they couldn't play defense, so they didn't go as far. They just the other night beat the Wizards. Held them under a point per possession. First time they've done that in a month. And to your point, Bruce, they're playing. It wasn't too long ago, about a month ago, they were 22nd, bottom 10 in defensive efficiency. And since then, they've been a top 10 team on defense. With the offensive capabilities of this group, Joe Harris shooting threes helps, getting better, you know, getting healthier and being able to shoot threes. Patty Mills. I was thinking Patty Mills. You know, these guys got to pick it up into three, and they're starting to. And now all of a sudden, their offense gets better. And then it's a matter, like you said, can they play the defense? If they can, they got the offensive firepower to contend with anybody in that conference, even the Celtics, if they don't pick it up, you know, they don't keep up with their pace.
Yeah, Brooklyn was really picking up some steam here, getting some forward momentum. And they just got another forward back. We have failed to mention here. He's been out almost 2 seasons, so don't blame you for not remembering to bring him up. But TJ Warren's back. TJ Warren is an exceptional scorer, one of the best college scorers. Him and Doug McDermott were battling, duking it out for the scoring title in college. He had a fine young career with the Suns and an insanely good bubble season with the Pacers. And this is a guy that can come in off the bench. And he can score really without the basketball. You know, he's always cutting. He's rebounding on the offensive end for putbacks. And he's really starting to show some signs defensively. He had a big stop the other night on the perimeter. And looking forward to seeing what TJ Warren can do. But they just got another weapon back that can help that second unit. And Cam Thomas, another young guy that known for scoring in college. He's helped pick up the load when Kyrie was out and when Durant is on the bench, and they're fun to watch. All of a sudden, they're a fun team to watch. I don't think we could have said that earlier on this season, but I definitely got my eye on them.
One of the guys for them that is really sort of floated a bit under the radar, but is definitely a glue guy for them is Royce O'Neal. I mean, you talk about a dog. Royce O'Neal's a dog. I mean, you know, he gives a team a kind of a PJ Tucker sort of a toughness. He can make some shots, but he's mostly just, you know, a kind of a gritty guy that, you know, you need those kind of gritty guys on your team. So a little few props here for Royce O'Neal.
Yeah, and you guys got to remember that was a very, very strange trade. That's the way we were told about the Royce O'Neal. Brian Windhorst reported to that trade and said it was very, very strange. So he's been a great addition to that team. That was a great pickup by Sean Marks, and Jacques Vaughn's got these guys playing extremely well. All right, and we are back, and let's try to help make you guys some money here. So we're going to talk a little bets here. World B, I know you're my guy with the betting. Bruce will definitely take your expertise as a hoops junkie as well. We're going to focus in today on three-pointer parlays. It's something that I've started to do a little bit more here recently. Of course, with the style of play these days, with the pace of play and the volume that teams are shooting threes. World B, what are some of the top teams you would recommend placing three-pointer parlays on? Who's shooting the most threes in the league?
Well, the important thing here is it's not just how well they shoot the three, it's how often you shoot the three. Because the Nuggets are one of the best shooting teams from three-point land in the league, but they take some of the fewest. So you're not going to get a whole lot, you know, if you're trying to do an over-under on how many threes, you're not going to do very well no matter how well they shoot. Teams you want to look at in terms of getting most attempts, Dallas, Golden State, Boston, Indiana, and Utah. Utah is always up there. Their philosophy, you thought maybe it would change when Quinn Snyder left. Their philosophy had always been take a bunch of threes. They were challenging the old Rockets for most highest percentage of your attempts that are threes. They're the top five. Those are the top teams in terms of percentage of attempts that come from three-point range.
You know, when I watch my beloved Celtics play, they've just been living on three-point shooting because they have four guys that are shooting better than 40% on threes. They've got Malcolm Brogdon. They've got Al Horford. They've got Grant Williams. And they've got Sam Hauser, who's kind of come out of nowhere this season and become a really key guy off of their bench. So I don't know if the parlays really involve total threes in a game for a team. I mean, I guess that's one of the ones you can do. But I would almost look at Boston just about any night, particularly when they're playing at home.
Yeah, I'm relieved to hear some of World B's lists for the teams to look out for when it comes to those bets. My two favorite teams to bet three-point parlays this season has been the Boston Celtics. Tatum's always good for two. Grant Williams is good for one. And Marcus Smart, typically always good for one as well. And if I'm feeling crazy, I'll throw Jaylen Brown in there, but he's been a little bit more inconsistent from outside. But just those first three names, Williams, Tatum, and Smart can usually get you plus money. And then the second team was the Dallas Mavericks. Dorian Finney-Smith, good for 1-2 a game. Luka is going to jack up a ton, so you're going to get a lot of bang for your buck there. Always got him for two. And then Tim Hardaway Jr. has put together a nice, consistent last 10 games for them, and he's starting to get some more opportunities to shoot the basketball. So
keep like throwing Timmy in there. Keep an eye on Hardaway, though, because he has – the last few games, he has fallen off a little bit. He got moved to the starting lineup. To your point, Ross, he got some really more opportunities, more minutes, more threes. But the last few games, he's kind of fallen off. So if you're looking at him, I would say just keep an eye out for him.
You heard it from World B here first. Keep an eye out on him. Gentlemen, do we have any other final thoughts here for this edition of 48 Minutes?
Well, I think we're going to go into overtime this week, Ross, right? We're going to go into OT and talk a little bit about what's coming up this weekend, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We can definitely do a little lightning round here with a weekend preview of the top matchups. World B, do you have one in mind, a matchup this weekend that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's under the radar, but the Jazz and the Bucks will meet. Quietly, the Jazz – despite getting rid of you, we thought they were just going in the tank. Well, not quite. They're one of the top offensive teams in the league. They're number four in the league, right where they usually are among the top. And they're going up against a Bucks team, which until Thursday, had been the best team in the league defensively. So it's a good challenge, you know, for the Jazz, and the Bucks may be a little ticked off after what they're dealing with tonight.
What do you mean? They're only down 43 with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I mean, you know, 130-87. So
yeah, I think I see Junior Bridgman in the lineup for the Bucks. So
hey, so Ross, the game I'm looking at for Saturday night is Pelicans and the Suns as the feud continues. I mean, New Orleans is occupying the penthouse in the West right now. Phoenix thought they'd be there. They are not. And there's that little matter of Zion's windmill dunk at the end of the game the other day. So I'll be interested to see if they go into Phoenix in a hostile house and kick some more butt. I think you're probably expecting them to do that because you've been on New Orleans all season long. But I'm looking forward to that one. That'll be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, a little bit concerned about the Pelicans injury report right now. Jose Alvarado has been out. Definitely want him back just to spice things up in Phoenix. I mean, he'll definitely get the boo birds once he's at the Footprint Center for that game. And then Brandon Ingram remains out. They just got CJ McCollum back. But as I've mentioned off air to both of you guys, I think the Pelicans are one of the deepest teams in the league. Every position, they've got some firepower. So that should be a fun one. That you kind of stole my pick there, Bruce. But another game that I was looking at as well as a backup, the Nuggets at the Lakers. That should be a fun one. Lakers playing, obviously, some better ball. Had a great overtime game against the Celtics. Fell short, but as we mentioned earlier on the pod, we'll be stating that Anthony Davis having an MVP type season. LeBron James looking to get back on track with his team at home, and they got to capitalize on those home games. And then I got to give a shout out to Jokic and Gordon. Both those guys right now are top 12 in field goal percentage. Jokic at 63.4% and Gordon at 61.3%. Not only are they the only pair of teammates in the top 12, but they're also the only two players in that top 12 that attempt over 2.5 3-pointers a game. So they're both balling right now, especially Aaron Gordon. He's putting together a tremendous season.
Here's a note on Jokic. I told you at the top about Steph, how they were scoring 19 more points per 100 possessions with him on the court as opposed to off. Well, there's one player, only one player that is has a bigger differential, and it's Jokic. It's 21, almost 22 points more when he is on the court per 100 possessions than when he's off. That's ridiculous for a team that's good, that talented, to have him that valuable. You know, his numbers are not as dominant, not as what we're used to seeing, but he's also shooting the lights out.
Absolutely. So we got some fun games on the horizon this weekend. We'll definitely be tuned into those, and we will be back next week. But that will do it for today, folks. Before heading out, be sure to hit that subscribe button. Drop us a comment or question you'd like answered or a topic you'd like us to discuss on the show. Bruce, World B, and I will have you covered all things NBA hoops this season. And we appreciate you tuning in to this edition of 48 Minutes. And we'll be back with you next week right here on Bleav.